I have on the line with me Mr. Denny Lane, 2018 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, as a founding member of the Moody Blues. He's also known for his work with Wings, with Ball, with Ginger Baker's Air Force, and a solo career as well. Denny, welcome back to KKFI and to the Wednesday Morning Buzz, and congratulations on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you very much. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. So, was that a cool night to be there at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Oh, well, you know, you can imagine. Just seeing the old Moody Blues people again was the first thing that was a great thing about it. But, yeah, I mean, who knew that was going to happen? And then suddenly it did. And I really enjoyed it, actually. Just being part of that whole thing. I mean, it's a lot bigger than you think it is. You know, the museum's amazing. We had a ball. It was really fun.
That's great. I really thought you were very humble and gracious in your acceptance speech, deferring to the latter-day Moody's, as it were. And
Well, you know, what am I going to say? I mean, I think I summed it up by saying I wasn't in the band that long, so I'll keep my speech short.
Right. That's pretty much exactly it.
You know, I think it was up to them to talk more, you know, I think.
Right. I think so, too.
That's just the way it is. I mean, I am genuinely very pleased for them that they went on to other things. You know, I mean, I did.
Right.
And it was good that they did. And I am truly quite a fan of theirs. And I'm very sort of proud of them in a way that they did that.
Yeah, it is amazing. But, I mean, to your credit, like, it was you guys that got a record contract that gave them foot into the studio door, as it were, to make Nights in White Satin.
Sure. But, I mean, a lot of bands in the early days were like that. We're all part of a big sort of renaissance of British bands, you know. And to this day, I still know a lot of people who were starting out like us, who are really famous now. So, I mean, you know, but there again, a lot of those bands, you know, they didn't continue. The great thing about the Moody's was they got new members and they continued. So I was quite happy to go in the direction I went in. And as I say, very, very happy that they went in their direction. Yeah.
That's right. A couple of the Moody Blues thanked radio as part of their acceptance speech. I'm just curious, do you remember the first time you heard yourself on the radio?
Oh, yeah. We were on the Chuck Berry tour when we got to number one. So that was a huge thing. You know, we were actually driving up and down the country doing shows, that's when we got to number one. But the first time we ever heard each other, I mean, our own record was, you know, probably a year or so before that when we put out another single. And that didn't go so big, but it was still a great feeling to think that we'd actually got that far, you know. You know what I mean? So I think that's the same with every band. They just get all excited and it's what they work for, you know.
Right. Getting back to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was looking forward to hearing from Mike Pinder, and he didn't speak. Is he okay?
Well, he chose not to speak. Let's just put it that way. I can't really comment on that. But, he and I hadn't seen each other for ages, and he looked at me and said, "It's been a long time." It's been great. And, of course, you know, that was really it. It's his choice not to speak. I really can't comment on it, Mike, so there you go. They ask you if you want to do the speech, you know, before you commit to it. They ask you. And then they ask you to write it out and look on the teleprompters. And I said, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to play it by ear. I don't want to do some long speech that's going to, you know, get into that thing. So Mike chose not to. Simple as that, really. And that's for his own reasons. You would have to ask him that.
I'd love that opportunity. One person who was sadly absent was Ray Thomas, who passed away earlier this year. Your reflections on Ray?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd been talking with Ray quite a lot up until a few weeks before he passed away, actually. and we talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he was, it's nothing really big deal, you know. But secretly, we were all very happy that we were going in, and him especially. So he, anyway, again, it's probably not my place to say, but there was a speech that John was going to make on his behalf, because you know that John was in Ray's first band, Al Wright and the Rebels.
I don't think I knew that.
John got the job through that. And he was going to make a speech on his behalf, read something that he'd written. And they'd cut the microphones off before, you know, they had a chance to. I suppose they might have paused or something like that and then came back to the mic, but the mic wasn't on. So he didn't have a chance to talk about Ray in depth.
Right.
But, I mean, Ray and Mike were the people that approached me in the very first, you know, lineup and said, "Do you want to put a band together?" So that's right there. You know, those two main people. So I'd love to say.
Obviously, the big song you were known for with the Moody Blues was "Go Now." Besides that, what do you see as a real standout track from that era?
Well, I mean, we could have put out a few more singles, but we didn't. We never got a chance to. There's one track that I heard recently after. Once we got, it's a long story, but Lee Thomas helped us chase up something from Universal. And we found out that there was a recording that we did of a Tim Hardin song called How Can We Hang On To The Dream?
Oh, yeah.
And we did a recording of it. It would have been a fantastic follow-up to Go Now. And unfortunately, because of politics and whatnot, it never did get released. And I'd forgotten all about the fact that we'd even recorded it. So that would have been, you know, a standout track for sure. And then there was a song called Stop that we had on that album that a lot of people covered, you know. And then another track was called Boulevard de la Madeleine, which wasn't on the album but was a big hit for us in France. That was covered by a lot of people. And I always think if tracks have been covered by someone else, like I had my Say Don't Mind, my solo song, covered by Colin Dunstone from The Zombies, it wow. always makes the song more important, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that people want to do covers of it, you know.
Yeah.
Their own version of it, I should say. There's a few songs like that that stand out.
That's great.
Oh, and the other thing is, of course, we did a lot of other covers, like, you know, we did stuff, rare stuff, that we got records from America, not just Go Now. We did other covers. We did I Don't Want to Go On Without You, which is a great song, I think, by, I forget the name of the band now. But, you know, we did a lot of songs of other people's, and they always turned out good. Because the Moody Blues was a pretty good harmony band, you know. So we covered a lot of sort of R&B stuff as well. So, you know, not just blues. I mean, we're mainly a blues band, and then we went into R&B because of our harmonies. So, in fact, I think we had more harmonies in the first lineup than they do in the new one.
Yeah.
We're more known for that, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I got to see I think it was on YouTube, a video of early Moody Blues. It was like some, I don't know what the event was called, but it was a lot of big pop bands of the day. The Stones were there, and I think Herman's Hermits,
yeah.
and several other people I never heard of, but you guys were in there.
Well, that was called the NME, the New Musical Express Pole Awards.
That's exactly
everybody
what it was.
Everybody was on it. And I think we opened it.
Yes, that's right.
We did a Bo Diddley song and Go Now and something else, I think. But yeah, that was kind of the bands that were all up and coming but had hits in the early days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Van Morrison was on there from them, and I think, you know, a lot of those bands that were up and coming and were, like, having hits of the day, you know, at that time. No, I'm saying it was really good for us because it was nationwide, and it was held at Wembley, and it was a huge crowd, you know.
Yeah.
So all that sort of exposure was all going on in those days. There was another show called Ready, Steady, Go, which was live, and then, of course, Top of the Pops, which just got miming. But even so, there were a lot of shows that started out in those days that we were all fortunate to be a part of. So it was all... you know, we're all friends with a lot of bands. Everybody's kind of friendly competition. And we all worked in the same kind of venues, you know. So it was a little bit like that in London at the time, yeah.
Right, right. So after you left the Moody Blues, what was the name of the band you had with all the string instruments in it?
Well, I called it the Electric String Band.
Ah.
I stole the name from a band called the Incredible String Band, which I really loved, which is kind of two folk heroes of mine. I was into folk music in those days a lot. Well, I brought up on folk music and blues and stuff. But I took that name because I had two cellos, two violins, and they basically a rock sort of folk trio, you know.
So this was before the Move or Electric Light Orchestra came along. You kind of like, in a sense, pioneered that.
Yeah, in a sense. But you've got to remember that the ELO and the Move were all friends of mine.
Right.
And they all came from Birmingham. In fact, managed by the same management, almost. But Bev Bevan was in my first band called The Diplomats. And he ended up being the drummer of the ELO. And all the members of The Move, Trevor, Carl Wayne, Roy Wood, I knew them all in Birmingham. So you've got to remember that we're all into the same kind of music and we're all kind of, you know, we're influenced by each other. And in fact, I got together with a couple of people from the early ELO lineup and then decided I was going to move to London and went back to London. But, yeah, I just knew everyone. So we all kind of, you know, helped each other along in that direction. Yeah.
That's great.
So I think it all came from George Martin, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Where it all started.
Yeah, really, like yeah. The Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby and things like that.
Of course, yeah.
And so then you were in a band called Balls, which everyone in the band was from Birmingham, is that right?
Yeah, basically. But, there's Kelly, he was from further down south, I think. But anyway, no, I think he was probably from Birmingham. Yeah, it was one of the Move. It was Steve Gibbons from the Uglies. And me, and that's about it. And Alan White. No, Steve Gibbons, you know, I don't even remember him really being in the band because he wasn't on the recording. There's me, Trevor Burton from The Move, and Alan White from Newcastle. So he wasn't from Birmingham. He came down with another band, and then he was the drummer in Yes for many years after that.
Sure.
But it was just the three of us. We went in the studio with Jimmy Miller. We didn't really come out with a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff wasn't finished. And we did a few gigs, but not many. And it was a big management thing. We weren't happy with the setup. And we kind of went off and did other things. But I did get those two guys into Ginger Baker's Air Force with me to start with. You know, they came along for the ride a little bit. And then they went on to do other things. So I stayed with Ginger. And that was about that.
That was quite a super group, Ginger Baker's Air Force.
Well, it was. I mean, you know, just the fact that two Traffic were in there, you know, Stevie and Chris Wood and Sebring Wood. And you know, most of the other guys were mainly jazz types, you know.
Right.
Jazz people. They were, you know. I mean, Graham Bond was in there. Graham Bond was the leader of a band called The Organization, and Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker were in that band. So I met them in the early Moody days when we did the Chuck Berry tour. They were opening for us. So that's how it all came about. You know, you get to know people and you move up the ladder or whatever you do. Whatever you do, you always keep bumping into the same people, you know.
Right. So going back to what you said a couple minutes ago about you having a strong appreciation for folk music, one of the songs you sang on that first Ginger Baker Air Force album was Man of Constant Sorrow. What do you think about that song? What made you pick that?
Well, you see, the thing is, I was, you know, I like Bob Dylan. I know Bob Dylan a little bit. I like what he does. And to me, he sort of carried on from Woody Guthrie. And Woody Guthrie was a big influence of mine as well. although we weren't as influenced by the American folk people as we were the British one or the Irish one. And so I was into that music sort of growing up, you know, acoustic guitar music and just making songs of all. Skiffle was very folk influenced,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was also very influenced by bluegrass music, you know.
Right.
In fact, the other way around, bluegrass music came from European folk music, and that's the way it is. I was always into that stuff. And Manic Country Sorrow was, although Dylan covered it, it was a sort of, what do you call that, anonymous song, you know, that anybody could put their name to.
Right, traditional.
And I just did my version of it, you know.
It was a great version, how the energy built in it. And, yeah.
Well, apart from fact, I kept forgetting the words. with songs like that, you can make the words up yourself.
Right, right. You then spent the bulk of the 70s in Wings with Paul and Linda, and you, Paul and Linda, were pretty much the only constants, and there was pretty much a revolving door of other personnel in that band throughout that decade.
Yeah, I like that, revolving door.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, again, I knew Paul. I knew Paul from the early Beatles days. I always tell the story that we toured with the Beatles. We were on tour with them, the old lady. And I knew him. And obviously, the reason he called me was because he wanted to work with somebody new, I think.
Right.
And he'd also been seeing me opening for Jimi Hendrix with my string band. And that went down pretty good. Him and John and Peter Asher were in the audience. And he called me shortly after. Well, I went to Spain for a while. And then when I got back, I finally got the call from Paul. It was really all that. You know, it was easy. Because we knew each other. It was that easy, how easy it was. I think if he'd have gone with someone he didn't know, it wouldn't have been so easy for him either. So I wouldn't have joined the band if it hadn't been with someone like him, who I knew very well, who wanted to do the same thing as me, you know, start again, basically.
Right. And he probably saw you as more of a peer than, you know, a fan, and that would be fawning over him.
That's exactly right. I like that you say it, because that's exactly what it was.
My favorite Wings album is Band on the Run. And that was just the three of you, and it was quite an adventure recording that. You went down to Lagos.
Yeah, it was under adversity, you know. We started on our own, just me and Paul, actually, just put the drums and guitar down to get the backing track. We didn't have a band by the time we got there, so whatever we'd rehearsed with the band, those tapes got stolen in Lagos, and the story's quite well known, and so we had to start from scratch. And just, we had Jeff Emmerich with us, who was like the big time Beatles engineer anyway,
mm-hmm.
and Wings engineer, so we already had our little team that we knew we could pull it off, and we did. And a lot of people, I think, like that because of the feel aspect of it. It was just me and him were brought up on the same music, so we kind of had the same feel for it, music, and it was pretty easy. You know, it didn't take long.
And Fela Kuti met with you guys when you were down there recording that.
Well, Fela was like a local chief's son, you know, and he had a band called Africa 70. There were probably about 70 people in it. That's why they called it that. And it was a big review of African music. And Ginger was attracted to that and went down there for that reason. He had a studio in the same town. We only went to his studio once just to overdub something. But basically, it was an EMI studio we had. And Fella just kind of chaperoned us around, just, you know, took us around, and it was all pretty good fun. We were very influenced by African music anyway. That's one of the reasons we went out there. The whole point.
Yeah.
At one point, I think we were stealing his music. You know, that's just the way it goes. Everybody steals everybody's music. I mean, otherwise there wouldn't be any music, right?
Right. There would be no growth. Right. It would be everything would stay the same. Ginger Baker played on one of those tracks on Band on the Run.
Well, he didn't play drums. He played a fire bucket full of gravel.
Really?
Yeah. Which he used as like a big maracas, you know, like he shook it above his head. And it was amazing. Ginger's not, you know, he's as thin as a rake. He's tall, but he's thin. See him shaking this bucket above his head with loads of gravel in it just to get a sound. It was amazing. It was funny as hell.
Wow, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And so I think it was the Picasso's Last Words was the song he played on.
A Grand Old Painter. Yeah. I think that was the track he was on, yeah.
That's you singing the beginning of that song, right?
Well, the beginning. I enjoyed that album from that point of view. That it was just very basic. Especially the tracks we did in Lagos were very, very basic. And then we brought them back to London and worked. And Tony Visconti got involved then with the scores and, all that stuff.
Mm.
But the actual putting down of the album was very easy. I think we spent more time partying than we did in the studio.
That's how it was back then.
Well, look, we were going out and listening to music. It was all about that.
Wow.
Really. We had some great times listening to those bands. And stuff. It was just like when we went to listen to reggae music. We'd go all around the world just to experience the music of different places. So that's what we did.
Do you have a standout moment, a favorite from your time with Wings, a concert or recording or something?
Well, how many hours you got? there's a million standout moments, so I wouldn't want to pick anyone. But, it's like picking your kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's like, I suppose the first major one was the first live gig we ever did. And that was at a university when we had about six songs and kept repeating them, pretending somebody was, requesting them. And it was just to see how an audience was going to react to us as a band. And we weren't that well rehearsed, but, we got by. We enjoyed that, just the fact that there was no press involved. And it was all universities. And it was like a band on the road again, really. It was just to avoid the press.
Right. Right.
But it really got us in shape. It knocked us into shape. You get these moments like that that stand out. And of course, Band on the Run was too, because of that. The adversity, where we had to get that done. There's lots of them,
Right.
I could write a book, but I never will.
I wish you would. I wish you would.
I
promise to
read. Somebody else write it.
Yeah.
I'm too lazy.
Fast forwarding through that decade, you guys did, of course, Venus and Mars and Wings at the Speed of Sound and Wings Over America, the big live album, and Back to the Egg and London Town. And then I just read recently that on December 9th, 1980, the day after John Lennon was assassinated, you were in a recording studio with Paul that day.
Yeah, it was the day off. Because it was the day he found out, and he wanted to come just to take his mind off it. Simple as that, really. And we just sat there and talked all day. We didn't get any work done. We just sat there and talked. Because I think if he'd stayed at home, he would have fell apart, maybe. But John was also a friend of mine to a certain degree, So we kind of, quite on each other's shoulders in a way.
Sure. Do you remember the last time you spoke with John Lennon?
Well, it certainly wasn't during the Wings days, because, we don't know what went down between him and Paul, but I was in touch with John. The last time I saw John was probably when Julian was born.
Well, wow.
Man, it was a time ago. But it was also, I went out with him a few times, and, that could have been after or before. I'm terrible at that stuff. Yeah, but we used to knock around quite a lot. He was kind of a neighbor, as George was. We all lived out of town and in the same kind of areas, rather than living in London. Mm-hmm. Paul was a townie. He lived in London, but we all lived outside. you know. And except that I used to see a lot of bands with him. We would go out and check out the American bands in town, stuff like that. We did that all the time.
And you know. I just read, I hadn't heard this before, so I'm not sure if it's true. Did you play with on George Harrison's all those years ago, the tribute to John Lennon?
I think we sang harmonies on. Or was it when we were Fab? Yeah, or something like, yeah. I definitely did that. Maybe another track. Look, don't ask me. I remember being at his house. I know that much. Yeah, I definitely sang harmonies on it.
Wow.
We didn't play anything on it.
I got you.
I didn't anyway.
Any reflections on George?
Well, George was probably my first friend in the Beatles because he lived down the road with Pat Boyd. And I used to go by a lot, yeah. He loaned me a guitar once and I never took it back for a year. So he must have liked me. But other than that, we'd bump into each other all the time, yeah. You know, it's like they used to come by and play us their songs as they're coming out of London. They would bring us the new songs that they were working on, and we'd play them our stuff and stuff like that. You know, so there was a lot of that kind of, I don't know, friendly competition, if you like. But we were definitely good friends. And you know, all the Moodies were very good friends with them, the early Moodies, that is. You know, Ray, Mike, Graham, Clint. They're all friends of ours. Yeah. It was good fun, good days.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like an amazing time, an amazing place to...
Everybody was getting down to London at the same time. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't avoid them.
Yeah.
Even if you wanted to, you couldn't avoid them.
You're coming back to Kansas City this week. You're going to be... this time at Knuckleheads on Thursday. Is this with the Criers this time?
Yeah, the Criers, a bunch of teachers I know. I've known them for years. And we're coming with Steve Holly as well, drums.
Steve?
So Steve was on, you know, the band back to the Air Gaggle album. He's a neighbor of mine.
Wow.
The Criers, again, say I've known them. I've never recorded with them. They're just a band that does their own thing. And I've done the odd thing with them. I've got another band on the West Coast as well.
Wow.
I do other stuff. The Denny Lane band, we call that. But, you know, the Criers are more sort of East Coast, put it that way.
What kind of show can listeners expect to hear at Knuckleheads on Thursday?
Well, it's all the stuff. You know, it's some Wings, some early Moody Blues, and some solo stuff. It's all of that. That's really all I can say. It's a cross section of the music I've had for years. You know, but I do have, like I say, I do have another show that I go out with this other band. I do band on an album and the old Moody Blues album with the other band.
Wow!
But this is a completely different show to that, although it does incorporate a lot of the other music. And that's it.
That's very interesting, because you've got quite a diverse career, and of course, it spans for decades, and so there's a lot to draw from.
There is. I also do some solo work, and that's very interesting for me, because I can pick whatever song I want to play at any time.
Right.
When you're working with a band, you're kind of restricted to the amount of songs I know. But when you are doing your own thing, somebody shouts something out from the audience, for example, you can do that kind of thing. You know, it's a hard job trying to learn all the songs I've already forgotten.
I bet. Yeah. I bet.
Last night with a band called Turquoise, who are all from Berklee School of Music, and they were great. And I did a little set with them in Brooklyn Bowl. The Brooklyn Bowl.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be going out with them as well. I'm also doing Bogies, which is a residency I did in California. Anybody out there wants to come to Bogies in Westlake, near Los Angeles, I'm there on May 20th. And that's the kind of residency where with the other band, and they should check that out. But anyway, I'm on my way to drive over to see you for the next 3 days, and I've got to go out and get the cars and get on the way.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Denny, and thank you so much, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, Michael. See you soon. All right.
All right. Take care now.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.